Okay, we're beginning here, six lines down on the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, where it says, "Amar Yudom Arav, b'sha sheYisrael olim leRegel, omdim tzipufim umishtachavim rivachim." When they used to come up for the Regel, they used to stand in tight quarters, but when they bowed down, there was plenty of room. Omdim tzipufim, the word tzaf means to float, and as Rashi explains over here, that comes from the fact that when you're in such tight quarters, or so many people are pressed together, you end up getting lifted off the ground because you're pressed together and your feet get lifted off the ground. So that's why it's called tzaf, as if you're floating in the air. And they bow down with plenty of space around them. Rashi comments over here that each individual, once they bow down, had dalet amot around them. That each individual should not hear the vidui of his friend, so that he should not be embarrassed. And that you were given your own private space when you bow down, so that you could say your vidui before Hashem. But that would imply that this was only true on Yom HaKippurim, the day that you would do vidui. Rashi on Masechet Avot, that brings the same Mishnah that we're going to mention over here in Perkei Mishnah Hey. Over there, Rashi comments and says, "So Ishma Ish Tfilah Shel Chaveiro." Over there, he says Tfilah rather than vidui. So there it might have a broader application because there he's mentioning tefillah rather than vidui. And they extend to the 11 amot behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim, behind the Heichal on the western side. What does that mean? If they were bowing down with plenty of space, why were they extending into the 11 amot behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim? So now that's modifying the first half of the statement. First half of the statement was that they were so tightly packed. They were like sardines, and they pushed all the way back behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim, behind the Heichal. That's how full it was. There was no room that people had to even stand behind the Heichal. Nevertheless, when they bowed down, Mishtachavim Revachim. So that's, it's modifying the first piece, not the second piece of this statement. This is one of the 10 miracles that took place in the Mikdash. That's not in the Mishnah in Avot. Asara Nisim Nasu Beveit HaMikdash. There were 10 miracles in the Mikdash. Number one, Lo Yipila Isha Mirech Basar HaKodesh. A woman never miscarried because of smelling the meat, the cooking meat of Kodesh. They believe that if a woman got the desire to eat something and wasn't fulfilled, that would cause her possibly to miscarry. And therefore, the Gemara talks about this later on in the Masechta with regards to on Yom Kippur itself. That if a woman gets such a desire, we try to dissuade her, but if we can't, then we let her go ahead and eat. They felt that it was a sakanat nefashot for her not to feed that desire. Lo yisriach basar kodesh meolam. Basar kodesh, no matter how long it stayed around, never became spoiled, putrid. Ve lo nira zvuv bebeit hamitbchayim, and flies never appeared in the areas where they were chopping up or cleaning up the innards of the animals. Ve lo yira keri legoyin gadol b'yom haKippurim, obviously relevant to us here on Yoma, which is that the goyin gadol never saw keri on the night of Yom Kippur. He never had to be replaced in the morning. They never found a problem with the Omer. Now these three are important because their baking is not doche et Shabbat, is not doche et Yom Tov. So the Shtei Lechem were baked prior to Shavuot. The Lechem Apanim were baked prior to Shabbat. And the Omer was harvested the night after Yom Tov, and they harvested just the right amount to bring in. And so if something went wrong, there was no ready replacement for these items. It wasn't like you could just bring in the next one. So because of that, it was important that no psul happened in these items, because otherwise you just wouldn't have them. You remember by the Lechem Apanim, we had this question in Masechet Shkalim, with what happens if they don't have Lechem Apanim after the week. There the Gemara asked the question of whether Lechem Apanim psul is good enough to keep on the Shulchan to be considered Lechem Apanim lefanai tamid. Is that enough to be considered tamid? And there they answered in the affirmative, that it is called tamid, and they should leave on the Lechem Apanim Pasul, rather than leave the table, the Shulchan, empty. Omdim Tzvufim Umishtachavim Rivachim, that was what we mentioned before. They stood in tight quarters, but when they bowed down, they had plenty of space. Number nine is, Vozik Nachash V'agrab Yushalayim Me'olam. There was no injuries from snakes or scorpions in Yushalayim ever. V'lomar Adam L'chaviro, Tzalei Makom Shalim B'Yushalayim. And nobody ever said, it's too squishy, too tight to be in Yerushalayim. I don't want to stay in Yerushalayim because the accommodations are not good enough. Potach b'Mikdash v'siyem b'Yerushalayim. It's an obvious question, which is, it says here, these are 10 miracles of the Mikdash. It lists 8 that took place in the Mikdash, and the latter 2 are things that happened in Yerushalayim, not in the Mikdash. So, Igatarte achronaita b'Mikdash. We have two others that we can fill in the Mikdash that would replace these two from Yerushalayim. D'tanya, Olam lo kabu gishamim ish shalatzei amaracha. The rain never extinguished the fire of the pyres on the Mizbeach, despite the fact that it was open, an open roof, an open Mizbeach, and it rained. The pyres were never extinguished by that rain. Bashan hamaracha afil kol ruchot shvolam baot umenashvot bo en mizizot oto mimkomo. That the smoke of the maracha that went up, the pyre smoke went up straight. The wind was never ever able to move it, change its direction. It went up straight without any influence from the wind itself. It says vituleka. Are there no more? V'hatanyo. We have another braita, Rav Shmaya. Probably she Mikal Beno, for name of a place. Shivrei kli cheres nivlaim bimkomam. The broken shards of pottery were absorbed in place. The requirement is that when you have something that is kodesh and it's nivla, it's absorbed into kli cheres can never be polate what is inside of it, never spits it out, so there's no way to kasher kli cheres. So what do you have to do with kli cheres that absorbed items that were kodesh? They're now pasul, because you have a problem of lina, you have a problem of going past the zman, so therefore they are psulim. So what they used to do with them is they broke them. They broke them into shards so that they wouldn't have a problem of utilizing these utensils that had pasul tam inside of them. If you do this, if you're eating inside of Yerushalayim, where you're eating kodshim, kolim, so you break them in Yerushalayim, they put them into the dump, that's fine. But if you're dealing with things that were eaten in the Azara, Kodshe Kodashim, that were eaten in the Azara, then they remain in the Azara. You break these shards, they're all in the Azara. So what do they do with them? They have a huge garbage heap in the middle of the Azara? And so it was no, the Nivlaim Bim Koman. They were swallowed up into the ground, they disappeared into the ground, the shards. Vamar Baye, Mora'a, Vinotza. In addition to that, the innards of the Ola, the Korban Ola, the intestinal tract of the Ola, plus the feathers that were taken off of the Korban Ola of a bird, v'dishun mizbech apnimi, the removal of the ashes from the mizbech hazahav, where they put the ketoret, they brought the coals there to burn the ketoret over there, those ashes, those leftovers were taken off, v'dishun ha-minorah, and the cleaning out of the menorah, nivlaim b'mikoman, when they were placed down, they were swallowed up in their place, they disappeared. They didn't have huge piles of ashes where they placed them down next to the Mizbeach. Tosafot actually brings down here a machloket with regards to the Trumat HaDeshen from the Mizbeach HaChitzon as to whether that was also Nivla Bimkomo, was swallowed up in its place, because the Gemara here does not mention it, although it seems like it should be, because all the other ashes that are placed here, all this other material is placed in the same location on the eastern side of the ramp, was swallowed up. So why not the Trumat HaDeshen as well? So Tosafot brings two opinions here. Ben Otam, who says he didn't think it was, versus the Riporat, who thought it did get swallowed up like the other items. So Gemara now has a problem. We have two additional items that are mentioned in this Braita. We now have 12 items instead of 10. Originally had 8. We replaced the two that were about Yerushalayim with the two that we had from the previous statement. And then we now have another two in the Braita, and we don't have anywhere to put them. Gemara says, no problem. Sulei talata avu chashvinu bechad. In the Mishnah, it mentioned three things, which are psula omer, psula shtei alechem, psula lechem apanim. Combine them all into one. And then I'll give myself an extra two spaces or locations in the Mishnah. So afik trei, vayel trei, take out those two. And now I put in the two that we have from the Braita here, which is that they were nivlaim bimkoman. Ihachi. If you're going to do that, when you say, oh, if they're all thematically connected, they're all one, Bluim Nami, Trehavu, Chashvinu Bechad. Why would you claim over here the fact that the Kli Cheres, the shards of pottery, were swallowed into the ground, as well as the fact that the ashes were swallowed into the ground? Why you counted them as two different miracles? They should be topically one miracle. It's about being swallowed up into the ground. If you do that, you combine those two into one, now I'm short one. Now I only have 9 in the Mishnah. Chashvinu Bechad, count them as one, Chasrulu, and now you're short one. Ika Nami Achritik. Hey, don't worry. We got a number of backups to this. We got more miracles here. There was a tremendous miracle with regards to the Lechem HaPanim. We also saw this in Shkalim as well. That on the day that it was removed from the Shulchan, it was as fresh as the day that it was put on the Shulchan. That's a week later. So it stayed fresh the entire time. So it says in Shmuel Aleph, when David HaMelech is running away, and he's starving, and he ends up in Nov Ir HaKohanim, and he asks them for something to eat, and they have nothing to eat besides the Lechem HaPanim. And over there, it describes Lechem HaPanim, Asum Lechem Chom B'yom Hilakcho. That it was to put the Lechem Chom, the hot bread, the fresh bread, b'yom hilachon, on the day that it's taken, that it was as hot or as fresh as it was the day that it was placed on the shulchan. Where it says, okay, so now we're up to 10, we're good, but v'tuleka, no more, we have plenty more miracles to work on in the Mikdash. Amar Rav Levi, davar zeh misorot b'yadeinu ma'avoteinu, this we have in misorah, makom aron enu min amidah. The placement of the aron takes up no space inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because the description in the Mishnah in Midot says that the aron had from its eastern side 10 amot, from its western side 10 amot, from its northern side 10 amot, from its southern side 10 amot. That means that there's airspace from the aron to the wall of 10 amot in each direction. The entire size of the Kodesh HaKodeshim was 20 by 20. So you have 10 amot of airspace on each side, then obviously the aron is not taking up any space in there. And that's the Mesoret B'yadenu, that the aron takes up no space there. V'amar Rabbanai, Amar Shmo, Kruvim B'neisa Yomdim. The same thing with regards to the Kruvim. Because with the Kruvim, it says that their wingspan was 5 amot on each side. That means the totality of the wingspan of each Kruv was 10 amot. They stood adjacent to each other. 10 amot, 10 amot. So if you put them across the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which is 20 amot in width, then the wingspan takes up everything. What about the bodies of the Kruvim? So it must be that they were also there. Bineis, the Gemara in other places has another option, is the fact that the wings extended out of the back of their bodies, not from the sides of their bodies, but assuming that, according to this Shito, the wings came out of the sides of the bodies, then the bodies took up no space inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So that means that you also have a miraculous item taking place, these two miracles in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which is that the Aron and the bodies of the Kruvim took up no space. The Gemara says, no problem with that. Nisei debrai kochoshiv. Nisei dekavai lo kochoshiv. Only miracles that were outside, that were visible to the people outside, meaning in the Azara, were counted here. Miracles that are inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which nobody is privy to, those are not counted here in the Azara Nisim. Not to say they didn't happen, it's just that we're not going to count them because they weren't obvious or available to everybody all the time. Where it says, Yochi lechem apanim nami. Says, what about the Lechem HaPanim? The Lechem HaPanim is found in the Heichal, it's not found out in the Azara. So you have to say loosely it's that way. Even though the Kohanim took the bread from the Shulchan and then they ate it outside in the Azara, nevertheless, the fact that it was on the Shulchan and was still warm and hot, that wasn't readily available to everybody. But here the Gemara says, no, Yachi Lechem HaPanim nami nisei de gavai hu. Lechem HaPanim nisei de brayu. No, it really is an ace that's outside. How do I know this? Damarish Lakish. The Gemara will see in Chagiga, we saw him in Achot. My dichtiv, what is written by Allah Shulchan HaTahor? Why is it called Shulchan HaTahor? Why when he says, talks about the Lechem HaPanim in Sefer Vayikra, it says that they are placed on the Shulchan HaTahor, the Shulchan that is Tahor. Tahor, Miklal Shehu Tameh. Well, if it's a Shulchan HaTahor, that means that it has the possibility of becoming Tameh. You only call something Tahor when it has the possibility of becoming Tameh. If it can't become Tameh, then why do you call it Tahor? It's automatically Tahor. So it creates a Suila Nachatu. What are you talking about? This is a kliyetz. It's a wooden utensil that is made to stay in place. It's not moved. So we have a din with regards to the tumah, that all the materials that are mentioned by Midian, that are in the same pasuk as sack, as a sack. Over there, the Gemara Darshins, all those materials are only mekabel tumah if they function like a sack. Number one is, they need a toch. They need it inside. Number two is, they are nital maleu reikan. They can be picked up and moved, both full and empty. So that means that if you have any object that, number one, doesn't have a toch, doesn't have an inside to it, that is not mikabel tumah. Number two is, if you have something that stays in place, is it fixed in place, it's also not mikabel tumah. Well, that's because of its size. It's so big that when you fill it, you can't move it. So that's also not mikabel tumah. Or because of the nature of the utensil, it's not going to be moved from that location, then it's not a utensil, it's not a kli anymore. It becomes almost chelik min abinyan. It's not mikabel tumah. So here the Shulchan never moves, it's put in place, never moves, so it's Kliya Eitz Asui L'Nachat, for Kliya Eitz Asui L'Nachat, ain't Mekabel Tumah. It doesn't make Abel Tumah, but Chutzetz Bifnei Tumah, it's equivalent of a wall or a roof, that it's Chutzetz, it blocks Tumah. So what are we going to do here? Now the truth is, it's not so simple, because the Mishnah on Masechet Kelim says that something that is plated has the din of the plating. So over here we know that the Shulchan is made out of Eitz, I'd say Shittim, but it's plated in gold. So if it's plated in gold, it really has a din of a metallic liya, not an eitz. Now, metal is not mentioned in that pasuk in Midyan, and metal does not have those same dinim. It should be mekabel tumah just because it's metallic, because it's got metal plating, it's got gold plating. So Gemara over there says, because of the pasuk in Yechezkel, which calls the shulchan a shulchan eitz, despite the fact that it was plated with metal, it still calls it a shulchan eitz. Therefore, we say that it has a din of eights or a din of properties of eights. So that's number one. Number two is, the Gemara says here, we have a problem, because you're telling me that it can become Tamei. How does it become Tamei? It's Kli Eitz, Hasuid and Achat, can't move it. The Gemara says, well, you forgot about this little incident, which is, Elamech, Magbim, Otol, Olay Regalim. They used to take it out to show it to the Olay Regalim. From Rim Lahem, Ruhi Chibatem Lifnei HaMakom. See how beloved you are to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Sishtiluko, Kisiduro. They used to wheel it out during the regel to show the people so they should get a sense of what was going on in the Mikdash and how amazing it was that the Lechem HaPanim was still hot. So the fact is that they did lift it up. If they lifted it up and brought it out, it's no longer a Kli Eitz, that's with an Achat. Now it is a movable item. If it's a movable item, now we're talking about something that is Kli Eitz that's movable, that's a Kli already. Now that it's a Kli, then it's V'kim Mekabel Tumash. And Amar, V'sum Lechem Chom B'yom Hilachol. So here this is a miracle that is not considered to be an inner miracle, gavai, but rather barai, because they brought it out. They took it out of the heichal, and they showed it to the people in the Azara. So they got to see this miracle. They were party to this miracle. I'll note here, we're not going to go into it so deeply, Tosafot and Menachot, and in other places, mentions that, as I said before, that a Kli Eitz needs a toch, needs to have an inside in order to be Mekabel Tumah. The Shulchan has that same problem, depending on where you think the Zer is, where you think the decorative crown is around the Shulchan. Machloket there, whether it's a lip to the Shulchan, then you wouldn't have a problem of a toch. But if you think it goes downward from the Shulchan down, then it has no toch in it. And how is it Mekabel Tumah? It has no toch. It has no inside to it.
What about so
it the pans themselves would be Mekabel Tumah, but the Shulchan would not be Mekabel Tumah. They're detachable. The pans are detachable from the Shulchan. So he wants to know, how is it Mekabel Tumah? So Tosafot over there says there are three categories with regards to Kli Eitz. Generally, Pshute Kli Eitz. Flat pieces of wood are not Mekabel Tumah. Over there he goes through three different scenarios. It says generally that's the din, Mina Torah. There is a separate din, one Midoraita and one Midorabanan, that certain flat pieces of wood are Mekabel Tumah depending on their utility. If they are made specifically to service man and to service the Kelim of man on them, then they might have a din of Kli Kibul even though they're flat. And so therefore he says, one of his rayot is that the Shulchan here is Mekabel Tumah despite the fact that it has no Beit Kibul. Which is something that comes out from this scenario over here that Tosafot mentions in other places in Shas. Alright, so now, where it says, V'tulaka, no more miracles? V'amar Rav Hoshaya, V'sha, Shabana Shlomo Beit HaMikdash. Shlomo built the Mikdash, Nata, Bo, Kominem, Bigadim, Shel Zahav. He planted all sorts of goodies made out of gold. And when we talk about goodies in their time, it's not dessert, it's not sugar, it's trees with fruits on them. They planted all these wonderful fruits in the Mikdash made out of gold. They used to blossom, they used to give fruit in their proper zman and proper time. And the wind blew, they dropped their fruit. So they basically produced. They were productive trees, real fruit, that were made out of gold. So it's a miraculous thing that happened in the Mikdash. Shneamar, how do we know that? Because it says, Yirash ka Libanon piryo. Libanon, the cedars of Lebanon, so we know that it means Lebanon, but in the Tanakh, Libanon is many times used as a name or a secondary name for the Mikdash. Partly, probably, because the cedars of Lebanon were brought down to help build the Mikdash. But Libanon is used as a double for the Mikdash, and that's what they say here. Yirash ka Libanon piryo. That it'll, here they're using the word Yirash to mean that it'll make sound. It makes noise. Kalivanon in the Mikdash period, its fruits. So when does it make noise when the fruits, when they're falling, when the wind comes and they fall off the trees, it makes noise inside of the Mikdash. Ushunichnisu nachrim leichal, when the non-Jews entered into leichal, yavash, they dried out. Shinamar, perach, Livanon, umlau, the blossoms of Livanon, of the Mikdash, languished. Well, what did they languish? They languished because the nachrim had entered, they no longer were productive. Batira karish brochalach ziram, in the future, Hashem will return them. Shenamar, here in it's talking about Yishayahu. It's talking about all the miracles that will happen. Latid lavo, natural miracles out of nature. And it says there, paruach tifrach, that it will blossom greatly. Vitagel, and the people will rejoice. Afgilat viranein, they rejoice in the joy and the singing. Kvod alivanon itana, the glory of the Mikdash is returned to it. Well, what's the glory of the Mikdash that's returned to it? That is the Paroch Tifrach, that it will once again blossom fully and it will give forth its fruit. Mara says, Nisei dekvie lo kochashiv. We're not enumerating here miracles that are static, in that they're always happening. Only miracles that happen not on a continuous basis, but miracles that happen here and there. They move by time or location. When they dump the ashes, they disappeared. That wasn't happening every moment. So those miracles are not counted. Mara says, Hashadati the Hoch, if that's the case, Arona Kruvim Nami. By the Arim and Pruvim, you can answer that as well. Not to have to say that they're inside, but rather, you say, those are permanent miracles. Interesting over here, in terms of miracles in general, why do they have miracles in the Mikdash? Why is it so important to do the miracles in the Mikdash? It's a Mishnah in the beginning of Kelim, which says that Eser Kedushotein, there are 10 Kedushot, and there the Mishnah enumerates different levels of Kedusha. It says, Eretz Yisrael, Yoter Kadosh, Mishar Eretzot. And within Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, Yoter Kadosh, Mishar Eretz Yisrael. Within Yerushalayim, Mikdash, so on and so forth. And it goes all the way to the Kodesh HaKodoshim, which is the holiest of holies. That's why it's called the Kodesh HaKodoshim. So there, the Mishnah enumerates these levels of Kedusha. Now the question is, what does that mean that things have, or items have, Yoter Kedusha? One of the explanations I heard from the Rebbe of mine, Rebbe Serebnik, many years ago, is that the obviousness of the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu is what brings something to have more Kedusha. And how do we know that the presence of Hashem is there? How do we know that the Shekhinah is really here? So you're talking about in Eretz Yisrael, in the Yerushalayim, in the Mikdash, is because exactly what's described here in this Mishnah, which is that within the context of the Mikdash, in these places, these miraculous activities were taking place, which made it more obvious that the presence of Hashem was there. And in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, as it says here, that there was a miracle that was kavua. I mean, the fact that the Aron and the Kruvim never took up any space, that's a permanent state of being, in which the physical world, in a sense, the rules of the physics are suspended. And that's why that's the Kodesh HaKodeshim, because that's the place that's most obvious that Hashem is present because of that idea. This comment about the miracles in the Mikdash, 10 miracles in the Mikdash, so on and so forth, is also related to this idea of Kedusha, that the many miracles mean that there's a suspension of the normal course of the physical properties of the world, and that shows the presence of Hashem, and that's why these places or these locations are more kadosh than other places. The same thing with Eretz Yisrael versus Shaar Eretzot. The Tamid Enei Hashem Lekecha Ba Mireishit Hashana Dad Acharit Shana. That God's eyes are always watching over Eretz Yisrael to determine when it should get rain, when things should happen in Eretz Yisrael. That idea that there's a Hashgacha of Hashem directly on Eretz Yisrael is what makes it more kadosh than Shaar Eretzot. And so on and so forth. And that's why these miracles here are very important, not just because it's miraculous, but because they also imbue these areas with a sense of Kedusha. That's part of the whole idea, that the Kedusha emanates from the fact that the presence of Hashem is so obvious in this location. Now the Gemara says, Amamar, Veshana Maracha. So then, we said before that the smoke of the pyres went up, and they were not blown by the wind, not influenced by the winds. Where it says, we have Veshana Maracha. Since when was there smoke coming out of these pyres? There were five things that were said about the fire that was on the Mizbeach, on the pyres of the Mizbeach. It was shaped like a crouched lion. It was as bright as the sun, or as clear as the sun. It had realness to it. It had a physical property to it. It wasn't just some sort of ephemeral type of thing. It consumes liquids like dry items. And it doesn't have smoke come out of it. So what are you telling me about the smoke not being blown? Over here, there is no smoke that comes out of that fire. No, we're talking about the layman's fire, the Tanya. There's a requirement that Bnei Aaron place an ish on the Mizbeach, despite the fact that there's an ish from Hashem that consumed all the karbanot. There's still a mitzvah to bring him in a hedyot, which is the basic idea, ain't some chim al anes. Despite the fact that the Eish came and swallowed or consumed all the Karmanot, nevertheless, there was a requirement that Aaron and his children, meaning the Kohanim, placed a fire. They put wood on and they made a fire every day. They increased the pyre. Despite the fact that there was an Eish from the heavens that consumed all the Karmanot, despite that fact, there's still a mitzvah to bring it from the lay people, meaning that we as Bnei Israel provide a fire. Where it says, Rav Utsaki Ari, was it really crouched like a lion? I saw it, and it looked like a dog, a crouched dog. I says, Lokasher, come to Mikdash Rishon, come to Mikdash Sheni. That's not a problem. Mikdash Rishon versus Mikdash Sheni. Mikdash Rishon was a lion, and Mikdash Sheni was just a dog. Mikdash Sheni, mi havai. Wait a minute. In the second Beit Mikdash, since when was there this whole miracle of the fire? Vamar Rav Shmuel Bar Nia, my dichtiv. What is it meant in the Pasuk in Chagai? Ve'etzebo, and I'll be pleased with it. Ve'ikavda. And I will be glorified. It's spelled ikaved without a hey. That's the ktiv. And the kri is ikavda. So it's chaser, ktiv that you're looking at. You be karinon, and we read it ikavda, like I did, which is with a hey on it. So my shna de mechusar hey. Why is it missing a hey? So what's the extra hey for? Now, Chagai is one of the Nevi'im that gives nevuah for the second Beit HaMikdash. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi are the key Nevi'im. Ezra and Nehemiah are the people that came back and put together the second Beit HaMikdash. We had Nevuot about the second Beit HaMikdash. So over here you have a Nevuot about the second Bayit, and it's missing a Hey. Why is it missing a Hey? Elu Chamisha Dvarim Shehu Ben Mikdash Rishon LeMikdash Sheni. These are the five items that were different between the first Beit HaMikdash and the second Beit HaMikdash. Elu Hein. First one is Aron VeKaporot UKruvim. The Aron, the Kaporot, and the Kruvim were absent in the second Beit HaMikdash. They were present in the first Beit HaMikdash. This is premised on the Shita that Yoshiyahu HaMelech put them into Geniza before Melech HaBavel came. The Stira, or a Machloket really, about whether the Bnei Bavel took the Aron, which it seems to be from the Psukim, that they took the Aron into captivity, versus the other opinion says that Yoshiyahu HaMelech put into Geniza prior to the destruction of the Mikdash by Bavel. Eish, the fire, this is what we're talking about now, the Eish Ben HaShamayim. Ushchina, the presence of Hashem. Ruach HaKodesh. And Ruach HaKodesh is with regards to the Nevi'im, that Nevuah stopped at that period of time. Urim V'tumim. The Urim V'tumim is actually one of the big day Kehunah Gedolah. So the Urim V'tumim itself was not missing, but it did not work properly. We weren't able to communicate with Hashem in order to get the messages through the Urim V'tumim, so either it was missing the Shem Hashem inside of it, or it just didn't work. Meaning that it didn't have that... Didn't have the ability to function. Imre. In mihava hava suyuya lo misayin. Now say this: there was a fire in the second Beit HaMikdash that came down from the heavens, but suyuya lo misayin, it didn't help out. It didn't consume anything. It was there. It was present, but it wasn't doing like it did in the first bayit, where it actually was active and consumed all that was on the mizbeach. Givegi here notes that in the Midrash Rabbah and Balotcha that the word Shechinah is replaced with the Minorah. And we know that the menorah represents the presence of the Shekhinah, as the Midrashim say in Parshat Tetzaveh, that it's a edut, the chol ba'e olam, that the presence of Shekhinah is there because the Ner of Maravit stayed lit miraculously. But by doing that, you avoid the problem. The Rambam, who says that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim was Kitcha the Rishona, Kitcha the Atid Lavo, who's meant from the time of the first consecration of Yerushalayim, it remained Kadosh because the Shekhinah is ever present there. So what do you mean the Shekhinah is ever present there? It wasn't there in the second bayit. But the answer is here, that if you switch Shekhinah with menorah, you don't have that issue. Rav Yoshev answers it in a different manner. Rav Yoshev says that the idea of Shekhinah means whether it's Shekhinah gluya or Shekhinah nisteret. Yes, there was a Shekhinah present in the second bayit, but it's a Shekhinah nisteret. Shekhinah gluya, that was only present in the first Beit HaMikdash. And that would accord with what we said before, that the idea of the presence of Hashem being there and the miracles that happen is what imbues it with the Kedusha, that was missing in Bayit Sheni. The Aron, the Kruvim, they're all missing in Bayit Sheni. So those miracles are not present there to make it as obvious that the Shekhinah is gluya and found there, but rather it's just Shekhinah nisteret. The Sfat Amed over here comments and he says, I don't think that it's necessarily the case that Nevuah was nifseket right away with Binyan Bayit Sheni and there was no Nevuah. But rather, he says that the idea is that the Nevuah of Bayit Sheni did not extend through the whole entire life of the Bayit. In Bayit Rishon, there was Nevuah throughout the whole Bayit Rishon and even afterwards. Bayit Sheni, the Nevuah terminates during the lifespan of Bayit Sheni, rather at the moment that it was built, that it was not there. And that's what he thinks that the Gemara means here, that there was no Nevuah Ruach HaKodesh in Bayit Sheni.
Tanabanan, Sheish Ishotein. There are six types of fire. Yesh Ochelet Veino Shoteh. There is one that eats and does not drink. There is Eish that drinks and does not eat. There is one that eats and drinks. There's one that consumes liquids like solids. There's a certain type of Eish that pushes away other fire. And there's fire that consumes fire. Now the Gemara is going to go through each one of these. These aren't necessarily related to the Mikdash, just because we talked about Eish, we're doing that. Should also note that 2 weeks ago, the Rashi talked about the fact that certain words in the Torah and Tanakh are sometimes conjugated in the male form and sometimes conjugated in the female form. Eish is one of those words where in the Torah, sometimes it's used in the male form, sometimes it's used in the female form. Truthfully, the plural of Eish is Ishim, but here they have it as Ishot, as in the female. Again, it may not be wrong because again, the Torah is ambiguous about which gender it belongs to. There's certain properties like Eish Ruach, that those are items that are conjugated both in male and female forms in the Torah. Alright, so now the Gemara is going to go through each one of these, which is Eish Eish Ochelet Ve'eno Shota. There is a fire that consumes, eats, but does not drink. Hadidan. That's a regular fire. Like we talk about a fire today. Liquids extinguish it. Solids, it consumes. Shotav ein ochelet. One that drinks but does not eat is ducholin. Those that are sick. When someone is sick, they have a very high fever. It doesn't consume them, but it makes them thirsty all the time. They're very thirsty. So it's taking all the liquids out, but it's not taking the solids. They don't have any desire to eat either, right? They have no appetite to eat. Ochelet vishota, fire that both eats and drinks, is Eliyahu. That's the fire of Eliyahu and Har HaKamel. Because when Eliyahu prays in Har HaKamel to defeat the Nevi'ei Baal, it says, "B'tamay Mashir b'ta'ala licheka." He told them to build a mizbeach, to dig a channel around the mizbeach, fill it with water. When the fire came down, it consumed everything on the mizbeach and all the water around the mizbeach. Ochelet lachim ki yaveshim consumes liquids like dry items, demaracha. That's the fire of the mizbeach, where it took both in the dry and the liquid items, and it consumed them. Yesh tocha ish. There is a fire that pushes away another fire, de Gabriel. That refers to Gabriel. It's actually a story that we bumped into in the Gemara earlier, and will come up again, which is with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who were thrown into the Kibshan Eish by Nebuchadnezzar, and there in his image, they see somebody else. They see a fourth man in the fire, which the Gemara says, or attributes to Gabriel, and he came in there, and he's mitztanein. He cools the fire off for Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, but he makes it hotter around it so that the executioners are actually consumed by the fire. They are singed and burnt up by the fire. So there, Gabriel enters the fire, and he's able to cool or push away the other outer fire. So that's Eish Tocha Eish. Eish Ochelet Eish. And there is a fire that consumes other fires, and that's the Shekhinah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the fire of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which consumes everything. Gemara brings a proof, Amar Mar, Hoshitas Bo B'nehem Sarfan. He's talking about the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Damad Amad Chet, which is the Mishnah about Kol HaMatzil Nefesh Achad Mi'Israel. Anybody that saves one life, it's Gilu Matzil Kol Olam Kulot, as if he saves the whole world. Over there, there's an Agadato about the creation of the world, where the Malachim say, Hashem, why'd you bother creating man? Why do you keep man around? And Hashem put his finger out, and he consumed all of them in his fire. Got rid of these Malachim that weren't on board with his plan. Is it really true that the smoke coming out of the pyre was not influenced or moved by the wind at all? Maybe Motzei Yom Tov Acharon Shel Chag. On the Motzei Yom Tov Acharon Shel Chag, it's very hard to understand what they're talking about here, but it seems to be we're talking about post-Shmini Atzeret. On that time, Akot Sofim La'ashana Maracha. They all looked at the smoke coming off of the pyre, and to see which direction it went. Because, on the Chag Der Nidon B'mayim, again, this is very interesting, because Nidon B'chag B'mayim, you would have thought meant Sukkot, and maybe at most, at best, Hoshana Rabbah. But here it's Motzei Yom Tov Acharon Shel Chag, seems to be talking about post-Shmini Atzeret. We do daven for Geshem on Shmini Atzeret. So now, they're looking at the Hashanah Maracha to see what Hashem has given them, what they granted them from after the Din Alamayim. Noteh Klapei Tzafon, if it is pushing towards the north, which means that it's a southerly wind, the smoke is going to the north, which means the wind is coming out of the south. Aniyim Smeichim Uvali Batim Atzivim. The Aniyim are happy, and the landowners, the rich people, are not so happy, because Mipnei Shegishmei Shana Merubim. That means that there's going to be a lot of rain, a lot of moisture, Uperuteim Markivim. First of all, there's going to be plentiful crops, because there's going to be a lot of rain, but because of the moisture, it's very hard to store the crops, and to keep them for a long period of time. They go bad when you store them. So what do they have to do? They have to bring everything to market right away. Both the plentitude, plus there's an inability to store items, is going to result in there being a huge flow to market and prices are going to come down. Klapei Darom, if the smoke moves towards the south, which means that it's a northerly wind, so Aniyim Atzivim Ubalibatim Smechim, then the Aniyim are upset and the Balibatim are happy. It means that the rains are not going to be so heavy. It's going to be dry. Uperuteim Mishtamrim. So they have normal production, but they also have a dry atmosphere so that they can store their fruits and they won't go bad. So that means not only can they produce what they need, but they can store it for longer periods of time. They don't have to bring everything to market. That'll bring the prices up. The Balabatim are happy, the Aniyim are not. Noteh klape mizrach, if it goes towards the east, which means the wind's coming out of the west, then everybody's happy because that's the measured wind. That's the one that makes everybody happy. There's enough for everybody. Plenty of rain, but not too moist that you can't store things. Everybody's good. Klape ma'arav, if it goes towards the west, then everybody's upset. That means that the wind's coming out of the east, which is a difficult wind that ruins everything. So this is what the answer is. The answer of the Gemara is that it went up in a straight
line, it went up like a staff, and it did not deviate from that. Doesn't mean that the wind did not influence the direction of that staff, of that pillar of smoke. It didn't dissipate, it didn't disperse the smoke. It went up straight like a plume, and that was influenced by the wind. So the plume could lean to one side or the other, but it still remained a single staff that went up.
Amar mar, klapei mizrach, akol smechim, klapei marav, akol etzivim. Is that really true? What we just said before in the Braita, that when it's leaning towards the east, meaning that the westerlies, akol smechim, everybody's happy, klapei marav, it's leaning towards the west, then akol etzivim, because it's the easterlies. Beraminu, is that really true? Mizrachit, deolam yafa, maravit, olam kasha. So how could you say that? Because mizrachit is olam yafa, is always great, and maravit, the westerly winds, is always kasha, difficult. So Gemara says, okay, we have to reconcile here. One place is saying it's good, one saying it's bad. Tzvonit yafa l'chitim. The northerlies are good for the wheat. B'shashi v'yu shlish. As long as they're already emerged or matured, point of a third. Kasha l'zeitim, and it's bad for the olives. B'sman shein chuntin. Kanata is the emergence of the fruit. So at the point of emergence of the fruit, of the olives, then it's bad for them. Ruach drumit. The southerly wind is kasha l'chitim b'shashi v'yu shlish. It's bad for the wheat when it's already matured to the point of one-third. It's good for the olives at the time that they are emerging. So obviously, they're mutually exclusive because you have the north wind and the south wind. One of them is going to cause a problem for the olives and one of them for the wheat. Although it's possible that they mature at different times and then it could have both. You could have your cake and eat it. How do you remember which is which? Shulchan b'tzafon and menorah b'darom. Shulchan is in the north and the menorah is in the south. The product that is on the shulchan is the wheat, the bread, and that's on the north. So then which wind is good for the chitim? The northerly wind. Menorah, what is the fuel of the menorah? Is the olive oil, the shemen zayit. So shemen zayit is in the south, that tells you that the southerlies are good for the olives. Each one direction grows its own. I mean, the shulchan bring the winds from the north are good for its own, for its chitim, and the ones from the south, meaning that the menorah is good for its olive oil. Lokasho, that's not a problem. Halan, halahu. That's for them, that's for us. Them and us, whenever the Gemara says halan, halahu, it's referring to Bavel versus Eretz Yisrael. Machloket, Rashi, and Tosafot, how to explain it in numerous places. You can see that in the Gemara Kedushin and other places. Tosafot mentions his machloket with Rashi as to regards to which one means bnei Bavel and which one means lahu, which means bnei Eretz Yisrael. Over here, it's less relevant because the speakers here are not necessarily from Bavel or from Eretz Yisrael. But the difference being that Eretz Yisrael is a dry land by nature, and it requires moisture. So therefore, when we talk about things being good or bad, when we're talking about the easterlies and the westerlies, they were talking about something that brings moisture and rain, another one that brings a drier climate with it. So for Eretz Yisrael, the easterlies are good because it brings with it a certain amount of moisture and rain, which Eretz Yisrael is desperate for. On the other hand, when it comes from the westerlies, which dry things out, that's not good for Eretz Yisrael because it's naturally a dry climate. On the other hand, in Bavel, which is naturally a moist, humid climate, they're sitting on the Tigris-Euphrates plain, which is a very fertile plain, plenty of water. So for them, they get more water, it's actually detrimental to them. So for them, the easterlies are going to be bad because it's bringing more moisture, more rain. They don't need that. They already have plenty. On the other hand, if you have the westerlies come, which are drying out, or they dry things out, that's actually beneficial to them because they already have a moist, humid climate. Having the dry come in actually balances that out and actually works well. So what's good for Eretz Yisrael is negative for Bavel, and what's good for Bavel is negative for Eretz Yisrael. And that's the reconciliation between these two brayta that we just brought as to whether the easterlies are good, which the first Braita seems to say things coming from the east are good. That's referencing Eretz Yisrael. Versus the second Braita, which says that easterlies are negative. That's talking about Bnei Bavel. And the westerlies that are bad in the first Braita, that's referring to Eretz Yisrael. And the second Braita where it says they're good, that's referring to Bnei Bavel. So with that, we'll finish the first parak. Hadron alach shivat yomim.